How to do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, February 14th, 2020. Happy Valentine's Day to all of you. Happy Galentine's Day to my first guest, Charlotte Henry. Hey, Charlotte.
Hey, happy Galentine's Day, babes.
Also with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, finally, Friday. That's all I have.
No, he's really super jazzed about Valentine's Day, you guys. He just won't say anything. So Andrew is here, partly excited because it's Friday and also excited because it is Security Friday. So we have a little bit of interesting your data and you news from around the webs. Take it away, Andrew.
Yeah, so I have a couple of small things to share. First is that we may have gotten some suspects in the Equifax data breach. I don't even remember when this was anymore. Maybe 2017. Like, it's been a while now.
Something like that. Remember when they basically said all of the data that you think is secret isn't secret anymore because one of the three massive credit reporting services got hacked? It's that one.
Yeah. So AP News reports that four Chinese military hackers have been charged with breaking into their network.
Yay.
This quote I shared was interesting. It says, the indictment also details efforts the hackers used to cover their tracks, including wiping log files on a daily basis and routing traffic through dozens of servers in nearly 20 countries. So, I mean, it sounds like this was well planned.
Oh, yeah. This wasn't somebody that stumbled in on an accident and went, oops, I guess while I'm here, I'll just take all this information. Yeah, that's not how this went down at all, apparently.
Yeah, it's not one of those breaches where they just forgot to or didn't put a password on the server. This is different.
Oh, yeah, they meant to. So, interesting. Well, I'm glad to hear there's at least a little bit of progress on that. What else you got?
So, I forget who did this investigation. I think it was Motherboard. There's a popular email app called Edison Mail. Mm-hmm. I wrote about them when they released their app on the Mac. And as it turns out, they scan users' emails for what they call interesting research. Now, they say, like, it's kind of unclear about, you know, what kind of research that's for. They mention so companies can make better investment decisions. So it sounds like it's just your standard, let's get this data for advertising purposes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's so outrageous to coin it as being for interesting research. Like, come on. Yeah. You're just scraping data for advertising dollar.
Yeah.
Behave yourselves.
It did feel a little disingenuous. You're not fooling anybody.
I can't believe I'm saying this sentence, but at least be more like Google and be honest about it. Like, with Google, we know what you're doing. Just be honest. You get this free service and the price of the free service is your data.
Right.
Yeah. Right. We all kind of get that. Oh, I don't know.
In as part of their response to this, they did say something that, you know, we, despite us doing this, we still respect our users' privacy, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like,
lol.
No.
That was exactly the right reaction to the rest of that sentence. Blah, blah, blah. That's where we're at with that, I think.
So. Yeah, blah, blah, blah is just the standard, like, boilerplate.
I think it is.
We've been caught. We're sorry.
Yeah, and we're not sorry that we did it. We're sorry we got caught.
Yeah.
Like, be very clear about what it is they're apologizing for, because it's not that. So I was actually a little disappointed in this because I did check out Edison Mail, and it looked nice. And it was making me a little happier than some of Spark's recent UI decisions, which I don't like. So
Which you're wrong about.
Well, it was decisions, and I just, yeah, Anyway, it's a very small thing that bugs me every time I use the app, and so I don't like it a lot. And I was hoping to have an alternative to that, and I don't. So, yeah. Mostly because Spark has been upfront about what they're doing, what they do with your data and when they do it. So, at least in that case, I'm making an informed decision. And the Edison Mail statements have all been sort of hand wavy about like what exactly they're doing. You know, interesting information. Come on, tell me what you're doing with it. Mm-hmm. And is it the text of the message? Is it who it's from? You know, like they're not quite as upfront as I want them to be about it. So,
yeah.
Not for me. Anyway, we are going to move along and follow up on something that Andrew and I talked about on a previous Security Friday, which was malware. And part of the reason... Oh, yes, Andrew. Did you have something else?
No.
Okay. I thought you did there in the middle.
He's just still laughing at Edison Mail's excuses.
I think, yeah, I don't blame him. I will be later in the show, spoiler alert, chuckling about that myself. So, Charlotte, you wanted to come and talk to us about malware.
Yes, thank you for letting me join the auspicious Security Friday. But I wrote up a quite interesting report this week that I knew would also tickle Andrew's fancy. It was from Malwarebytes, and they found that Mac threats increased by 400% in 2019 compared to the year before. Mm-hmm. So they detected on average, using obviously the Malwarebytes software, 11 threats per Mac endpoint during that year, and it was just 5.8 threats per Windows endpoint.
Interesting.
So we've known for a while that the idea that Macs don't get malware is totally wrong. We've known that for a while.
Oh, yes.
But the rapid rise is really interesting. My working assumption is that this is just because lots of more people use Macs for lots more professional things, and therefore it's a lot more valuable to make Mac malware. That's my working assumption. Mm-hmm. But it's very interesting, and also it's interesting the kind of things that are particularly targeted at Macs. It's not apparently the more traditional types of malware. It's things particularly like adware and pups, not the nice doggies, but potentially unwanted programs.
Mm-hmm. This is your, I'm installing this program, and this program also threw in a search bar or another little program to help scoop all my data out and send it somewhere else that I didn't know about or didn't explicitly authorize.
That kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I have seen people dispute the report. And in Malwarebytes' report, they also say they recognize that they have biases in this data. Let's see.
That's a very good point.
Mm-hmm. For example, these machines are all devices with Malwarebytes already installed. And this means the Macs represented by the data may be machines that already had some kind of infection, which is why the person installed it in the first place.
Right.
So I'm not sure if maybe that's some kind of survivorship bias or something else. But at the same time, it's still notable. And I would agree that.
All I would say to that is it's a very fair point. Obviously, people who are going to be more conscious about security issues are there and may have already suffered some issues are more likely to put something like Malwarebytes on their device.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Totally agree with you. But I think what the demo data, and I also agree with Andrew totally, that this is not the kind of definitive data set that proves everything is going to hell in a handcart. But I do think it is significant. I don't think the growth can be totally underestimated. I think it's very significant, and we shouldn't just dismiss it so readily, which is why you guys always tell people all the different types of precautions they can make to try and not add to these statistics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. I do think malware on the Mac is definitely rising.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's indisputable, whether it's via this report or right. other things. I think that's becoming increasingly clear, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. And one of the nice things that I saw in this report is that basically what they talk about as malware, like, usually when people talk about malware, they're talking about something, yes, something with ill intent, but a lot of times something like a virus, which is a particular flavor of malware, will do bad stuff on your computer. It'll delete a bunch of files, or it'll encrypt your drive and lock you out of it, and you have to pay somebody, you know, that kind of thing. And very little of that stuff is what's getting through. It's usually adware, like, you know, it'll redirect, like, if you're searching using DuckDuckGo or Google or whatever, it's directing that search to a different search engine, or it will cause something to load in the background, like in another tab on your web browser, so that every time you open your web browser, that ad loads, and then they get, you know, their fraction of a cent or whatever from that happening in the background. One of the ones that I think is the most common is probably the cleaning stuff. Mac Keeper is one of these that's partly PUP, which is the potentially unwanted program, and partly adware, because that's most of what it's for. And like, I know if you go do a web search for uninstall Mac Keeper, you will get approximately 11 squillion hits, because there's so many people who have written up how to get rid of it, because nobody actually meant to get it, or they went into it with the best of intentions, like, this is going to help get a bunch of junk off my hard drive, and that's not actually what it's going to do for you. So
it just added a load more junk.
Yeah, but you know, but again, like, the attack vector of having a Mac is a far more appealing attack vector than it used to be, like both of you were saying, because there's enough of them now that it matters.
I think that's one of the key takeaways, although that has obviously been the case for a number of years now. Mm-hmm. I think obviously being aware of the type of things Macs are particularly susceptible to and targeted with is also important for all of us who use Macs day in, day out. Right. Just as a kind of broaden this out, and just to discuss the kind of types of malware that particularly highlighted by malware bytes, they said that adware.newtab, that was the most detected piece of malware that they found. They've detected it nearly 30 million times during the year. Mm-hmm. And there was also the osx.generic family, which is also, that actually dropped down as well. So it's having been a very common one. So that's kind of interesting that, you know, the adware is really shooting up, and this more, the one we always used to know about as a bigger threat to Macs, seems to have dropped down their list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is kind of one, like, it's good news, bad news. Like, you could still get, quote, infected with something, but it's not necessarily going to be something that's going to go nuke important pieces of your hard drive or lock everything down. Those exist, but they are way, 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 way less common. And part of the reason for that is because it's really hard to install anything automatically or secretly in the background on macOS anymore. That's part of what Gatekeeper is supposed to do. When you download an app from a website that is not the Mac App Store and you go to open it, it'll say, hey, like, you downloaded this from the web. Are you sure you want to open it? And then, you know, if you have your settings set...
Nine times out of ten, the answer to that question is no.
Right. If you look at it,
there's some good stuff you need to download, but be careful with that stuff.
Awareness is important. That's why we have Security Friday. So,
and then we could probably also turn that into a security tip. You know, last week we mentioned use anti-malware software like Malwarebytes, and since you mentioned, some of this more serious stuff can actually go around and messing with your files, and that's why you should keep a backup. Ideally, more than one backup, like two or three.
Oh, yeah.
You should have a backup in the cloud, like maybe Backblaze or CrashPlan, one of those services, or I call backup, although that you can't do that with Macs.
Yeah.
But then you should also have a local backup that you store on a hard drive with Time Machine.
And Dropbox also, if you don't want to delve into any of the services Andrew has mentioned, which are all great services, you know, Dropbox does a decent job and some of making, you know, I for example sync all my photographs directly to Dropbox, so that, you know, because one of the things that would be most upsetting to me is if any, you know, my hard drive or my phone or whatever got severely damaged,
yeah,
I would lose lots of photographs that matter a lot to me. So even very simple things like that can make a big difference.
Yeah, definitely the backup method should be one local, one remote. The way that I personally solve that problem is that I have my local backup that goes across my network here to the NAS that's over there in the closet. And I have a separate backup. I have an external hard drive that lives somewhere else, that lives at someone else's house. And like once a month, I go get it. I have a little calendar reminder set. So I pick it up. I bring it home. I plug it in. I do a carbon copy cloner backup. Hi, Mike. And once I do the carbon copy cloner, I have a block level copy of every single bit of data on my hard drive, literally. And then I take that drive and I take it back to that other person's house. And then that way, like if something happens to my house, which takes my computer with it, then at least I know I have that backup someplace else that I don't have to worry about. And I also use Backblaze for my cloud backup. So, yeah. So I have like it's belt and braces, as Charlotte would say, for my backup strategy. And I used to do tech support for a company that sold hard drives. So that's where I got to be super extra paranoid about making sure all my data was safe. So that's at least for now, that could be subject to change. That's my backup strategy at the moment. Backups are always a very, very good plan to have, especially, you know, like if you do get something like this, you can just revert to that earlier version relatively easily for the most part, especially if you're using something like Time Machine.
So, yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
And maybe we should also take this opportunity to point out that iCloud itself isn't a backup service. It's a syncing service.
Yes.
So if you delete a file on one device, it also gets deleted on the other devices. So you should do more than just store your files on iCloud Drive. You know, if you're using iOS devices, iCloud Backup is an actual backup. Mm-hmm. And then if you're on Mac, like we said, use one of these third-party services.
Yeah. Now,
yeah, that's a really good point. Because it's easy to get lulled into a full sense of security with iCloud, because it's like, oh, I go on the web and all my photos and all my documents are there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would point out is that iCloud backup for your phone is backing up, but it's not backing up everything. So if you want to make sure that all those Wi-Fi passwords are backed up, your health data is backed up, all those sorts of things. You want to make sure that you are plugging your phone into your computer, possibly like a caveman, but I won't judge you because I do it too. And then plug it in and make sure that you have a local backup on your computer of that. It works both on macOS and on Windows. If you have a Windows machine at home, you can use that. I personally use iMazing to make sure that I get a complete backup of everything. I really like it because it will back up all kinds of stuff that does not get backed up otherwise, like messages or voicemails. If you have voicemails that you want to make sure get preserved, you can always use iMazing to back those up. And I like that it gives me a lot of transparency and a lot of control over what it is I'm backing up. Like I know iCloud backup is backing up these things, so I don't have to worry about it here. But then I've got a backup locally of everything. And I have one each for my phone and for my iPad to make sure if something happens that I don't have to, you know, lose my streak of all my rings closing on my watch and things like that. So, So that's one good thing to know about iCloud backup. If there's anything that's sort of secure data on your device, that stuff's not getting backed up to iCloud. And if you want to make sure that some of that stuff is happening, you can use iTunes. If you don't have Catalina installed yet, you can use iTunes to get into that stuff.
Yeah, and I think this conversation about backups is very timely just because we, as we've just explained in the first half of the show, the number of threats coming at Mac users now is significantly increased.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's definitely good to make sure that you have that stuff someplace else, you know, in case. That's where, you know, in case is kind of my stance on a lot of things, so that's generally where it comes from. If you have backup tips, if there's a service you enjoy, or if you have a particular trick for making sure that your data is safe, we want to know about it. You can get us at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. I want to thank both of you for being here today. Andrew, thanks so much for coming by for Security Friday, as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Charlotte, thanks for coming by for Security Friday today. Glad to have you.
Thank you for including me in this special club. It was good fun.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you on Monday. Have an excellent weekend. And until then, be excellent to each other.